Do you guys know what time you're leaving at? So, but you're not going to make a deposit this morning. You're not going to do anything with deposit. Okay, I'll just wait. I'll get you that. One of the most annoying things about me and about and it's not really about me because it's about how I see the scriptures is this idea to never let anything go. I'm not trying to embarrass anybody, but yesterday we had a meeting with Pete and Harry and John, and Harry made a comment, and I stopped everything until that was done. And you've all seen that happen a thousand times. And it seems to me that once you have apprehended or been apprehended by Pentecost, truly apprehended, that you can never again do this thing that we all want to do, where we just let something slide. We let a comment go. If you think about how many thousand million times that you've done that in your life, then it seems to me that that's probably the singular thing that takes time, because you would never have considered the possibility that the act of letting things slide was rebellion. Does that communicate? I mean, you do it, you know, I've never been married, but I can imagine it must happen every day, the idea that you would let something slide. It's something was said that bothers you or something. Now, is letting something slide or not dealing with making everything clear, black or white, is that something that we should do? It would be very easy for me to say, all right, I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to stop. You know what I do. I don't have to explain it. And I'm not saying for this discussion, I'm not saying that I'm right or wrong or indifferent. I'm simply saying that to me, as I understand the scriptures, from the minute that we become a believer, from the minute that we're apprehended by this mystery, we can never again do that. Now, does anybody have any response to that? Harry's been the brunt of it lately, so does Harry have any response to it?
Oh, you're right. I agree. You're right.
You almost walked out yesterday. I mean, like, walked way out.
I'm very upset with you. I don't like being stopped. I don't like being called on that bullshit. It just makes me mad.
But can you...
I have a question. response is that you've told me before you let things slide. Like there's too, but there's too many things, too many people in here to call everybody on their bullshit. So you like if you see me or somebody else, someone else is dealing, you're dealing with someone else, then you let that slide. So I don't understand the difference.
I don't understand what you're saying right now. Have you ever? When do you see me let things slide?
Well,
when I was sick, I do. When I wasn't able to even hardly speak, I do. But do you see me let things slide? Do you ever see me?
You told Ajay. I'm just pointing out the time we had a discussion about 3 months ago, where you said that you could tell my countenance fell, but you let it slide because
I didn't feel like addressing it. That was my sin. I wasn't justifying it. That's why I told you about it. I was feeling bad, and I didn't feel like addressing it. But that didn't make it right. But think about it. The way of the world, the way of society, the way of all societies is that we have been conditioned to do this over and over and over.
I'll tell you how I see it. Is to me, love is just crap and not worth responding to, and it goes out the drop. If it's something real, it won't go away, and then you respond to it. To respond to everything, that's what you do, but it's not what I do.
I've noticed.
But I don't know that I'm wrong and you're right.
I'm not saying anything's wrong or right. I'm just telling you that from my experience of becoming a believer, I mean, as far as I know, I haven't let, you know, unless I was just pure rebellion or didn't feel well, I haven't let anything slide since then.
I guess what it hits me is you're calling it rebellion if it's not done the way you
no,
do.
No, I'm calling my...
So it's rebellion for you then.
If I see something and I don't say anything, then that's my rebellion.
Okay.
I'm not saying what anybody else does rebellion. Yeah. That's their business. But I'm trying to figure out how you could do anything other than let address it. That's what I don't understand.
Cowardice.
No, it's not cowardice.
Not on your part, on somebody else's.
No, I'm talking about on anybody's part. It's not cowardice. It's a template. I mean, when I read the scriptures, and again, it's all connected to the apprehension of being apprehended truly by what Pentecost is and what this celebration is. It's ripping time. So that you have no more time. So that you can never again have what the Bible calls a spot or a wrinkle or a blemish on the garment. And your garment is the righteousness of Christ only. Never about you. I don't understand, if you see that, how any of us can let things slide. Because then we are not exhorting one another daily, while it is still called today. We are, for whatever reason, and that's what I'm trying to conceive of, for whatever reason, we just let it go. Now,
well, if you really want it.
That's why I do.
To me, it seems patently obvious. Those two things can't coexist. Therefore, if I let something slide, it's because I still believe that there's time. I don't... You said if you see Pentecost, if you see it correctly, fully, and what I'm saying is the evidence that you don't see it correctly and fully is that you let something slide.
Okay.
I think by definition, you wouldn't be able to do that. And I think when I am seeing clearly, then I can't let something slide.
You know, the thing that happens quite often is I don't know how to say this. As far as I know, no one here, or no one in my world, ever has to have any question about what I'm thinking about. or what I what my response to something is. Now, I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or different. I'm trying to understand it this morning. That's really, really what's going on. I'm trying to understand what it is that if you truly see this mystery, that then how can you, how can any of us, and I, and again, I know when I do it, when I just don't feel like addressing something, it's getting, you know, it's just, and so I just let it go. Well, the question is that a spot on the body of Christ? Is that where the garment is touching the flesh?
And I can't answer, but I know you get into situations where you look at the person and you go, you've been gnawed on so much over this, it's not worth it anymore.
Well, I mean, again, we can't look at it like that. We can't.
I think you can, because in the start of the Seders, when I first came here, John Rutledge I wound up calling it the question. And it really, at the start, it really confused me. And Pete knows what I'm talking about, because he and I have talked about this several times. And
does anybody have anything against anybody? Is that
no, I don't. I think it's wonderful. Because
no, was that the question?
No, the question is, can you sit down and eat in peace?
Leave everything else.
And at that point, you got to ask yourself some questions. And in one situation, I look over and go, I can do this. This is, you're not worth the airtime. I'm sitting down, enjoying the meal, enjoying the fellowship, and that's it. And then you get into a situation where you look over and you go, I can't do this. And that's when you have to speak up. But you have to ask some questions of yourself before you go into somebody else's case.
Well, I understand that. But here's what I'm saying. Even when we do, like each time we do Passover, I mean each time we do the Seder meal, it's a mini Passover. Okay, the essence of the Passover is the destruction of all the leaven. Is there anything in you that hasn't been revealed? Is there anything that where you see lack? Is there anything where you don't believe the power? When I say that the leaven of the Sadducees, is there anything where you don't see and believe the power of God? Well, really what that means is there anything that you see isn't finished? And so we do that. Okay, we can think about it. Okay, we start out and we do the Passover. Let's go back to 2,000 years. They did the Passover once every year. Okay, then Jesus came along, and when he did when he said, as often as you do this, he was talking about the Agape Feast, because they did that, the Seder meal, for every Sabbath. So they did it. And then, okay, now we're addressing this once a week. Well, it seems to me, though, when you read the further scriptures, that it says that every time you feed yourself, every time you eat, you have to address that. Am I eating and drinking damnation to myself because I am holding something in? Or I haven't forgiven somebody, or whatever it is. Well, then finally, you come to a point where, my God, it's not just this once a year back then, and then, or it's not once every week for the Agape Feast or Seder meal, or it's not even every time I eat. It's really every time I take a breath. Because otherwise, if I haven't done that, as far as I can see, and this is what I'm trying to, I'm not condemning anybody here. I'm saying from my perspective, from what I see in the scriptures, I don't know how we can do it. We have to, because every time that there is something for which it hasn't been, there's no peace about it, because there's something hidden, there's something inside, there's a response inward, then the temple can't be emptied. you can't forgive even. Because but you've made an agreement with yourself that, well, I will either deal with this later, or I don't, like I just told you I did, I don't feel like dealing with this now, or that's just that person the way they are, or in other words, there's been a deal made about it without it having transformed your mind. And so that's what I'm seeing. When we, you know, it's easy for, you know, I used to get mad at Pete about every 5 minutes. And now the things that I used to get mad at him about are the very things that endear him to me. Because it's just, that's, you know, and it's not a matter of, I don't get mad at Pete if he forgets his keys or forgets, you know, that's you know, we've all made jokes about it. But but for some reason, I do get mad at Gary, and still do, when I know that isn't dealing with something, when he's made a truce. Now, can I just say, well, can I do that like, well, the same thing that I do with Pete, that, well, that's now his endearing quality? No, I can't. For a lot of reasons. Number one, Gary's a teacher. Now, and I could go around the room. You know, there's anything that, you know, probably if Brian has been here 10 years and he still does some of this stuff, like, can I ask you a question only? Then I will be really upset with him. But now it doesn't bother me. But I'm trying to understand. It seems to me that our apprehension of Pentecost, this is central to it, that it must affect how we conduct ourselves, what our action is on a second-by-second basis, so that we get rid of anything where it hasn't, in fact, whatever that issue is, and hasn't been resolved and renewed in your mind, and you know, so that there is total peace about it. Because the issue is, we've seen, it's never trying to correct somebody. The issue is how you address it, what you do with it. You know, most of you don't, I'll talk about John and Josanna since they're not here, but John and Josanna just about got divorced because Josanna was bored to death. You remember that? Well, what happened? All of a sudden, whatever happened, what it was is they started talking about the intimate things that they couldn't conceive of talking about before. And all of a sudden, where they thought there was something that was so bad they couldn't talk about it, or John did, all of a sudden that's what brought life. And I think I just want us to ensure that there are no things about each other that haven't been resolved, not fixed. I'm not talking about fixing anything. I'm talking about having it so that there is absolute, that there is total and 100% peace, because somehow your judgments about that situation, whatever it is, or your propensity to hide it or be ashamed of it, or whatever it is, have been turned upside down. And am I communicating? Or just I'm ranting, I think. But this is what's been in my mind all morning, ever since the moment I got up, is the idea of really, because, and you have to do it in love. I mean, you can't, and I promise you, you're not doing it in love if you're putting somebody down. Because what each of us have to see is that the struggle is not trying to fix that person. Our real issue is, why does that bother me so much? There's something in my mind that is keeping me from the fullness of God, because there's something there that says it isn't finished. And what am I, what am I guilty about that's keeping me and keeping these closets in the temple full of all this junk? So that you're really free. If the Son has made you free, you're free indeed. And I want you to be free indeed so you can just be instead of trying to be. And the F, and this is what we were talking about, John and I were talking about yesterday, with regard to the Satan's half second. The idea that in order for us, we've learned that in order to for us to protect ourselves, to exist in society, to not get in constant fights, to not be embarrassed, or whatever the issue is, we have learned to take every stimulus and run it through some kind of a meter in here. And that's what I used to call Satan's half second. Rather, so that there is something either, and if you believe what we've talked about, it's either guilt or idolatry. And the idolatry is how someone should behave. And so all of a sudden, I have got to get, it seems to me that we've got to get rid of that Satan's half second, so there's no more delay in terms of if there's an impulse, there's a response. It's whatever you see the Father do, that's what you do. It's whatever you, you know, there's not a consideration of it. And I'm saying to you that I believe that the reason, one of the reasons, though there's still those considerations for it, is because there are issues for which you are still have trusted this thing, this beast. You are still either are still making judgments and therefore are in debt to this thing some way, or there's something that's going on, you know, that there's some place probably where you haven't forgiven yourself, or there's some place where somebody that you haven't forgiven. Does that make any sense? And all I want us to see is that if we're going to properly understand and celebrate this mystery of Pentecost, to see really what happened 2,000 years ago, that these are the issues that are keeping us from living it. We can talk about living it, we even think about living it, but we don't have the capacity to live it as long as we are still making the judgments with and considerations of how we deal, how we live. Now, this is why I believe Paul said, "You exhort one another daily while it is still called today, lest there be any root or any unbelief within you." Capisce?
We've got on either Tuesday or Thursday night when we meet, one of our members has to bring kids. And at some point, usually around 20 minutes or so in the Bible study, the kid has to come up front and start distracting the attention from Bible study to himself. And it starts small and it grows and it grows and it grows, until he's successful in basically stopping Bible study. The lesson is over, Bible study's over, the kid is now the center of attention. We've talked about it. The parent, I mean, this really makes me feel terrible. The parent looks out of the corner of the eye to see if I'm getting upset, you know, taking cues from my reaction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing that I can do about the situation. There's nothing that I can do. I've tried. There's nothing that I can do about the aggravation I feel when Bible study is derailed time after time after time by this behavior.
Can I address it?
I'm stuck.
Can I address it? We had how many little ones at the same time when we first started?
All the Buckner's clan.
No, the whole bunch of them. There was about... And finally, what happened was, is that we found out that they were the Bible study. And that's the mystery.
And then we hired a babysitter.
Well, we did later, or we put them in the hallway, but I mean, I remember that specifically.
When the wind meters start, you can say close the doors. Or the ice machine starts, you can say turn off the ice machine. Okay? I can't say turn off the kid. And Bible study's over.
I understand that. But
and I've
we had
okay. That's the reality. That's where I am. God knows I don't want the parent to not be able to come to Bible study. I don't hate the kid. I guess all I'm saying is.
But it's gotten your attention.
Well, it aggravates me.
Right.
So I have to live with the aggravation. Is what I've come to.
Or. The reason I was smiling is you can't believe how many little monsters we had at the same time.
No, I mean, I do believe it. I do. I mean, I'm not.
And we only had one little a room much smaller than this.
I'm not going into this with no history and no thought and no prayer and no discussion. What I'm saying is, after all of that, it's come down to the fact that I can't change the situation. It still aggravates me. I don't flip out or anything, but it aggravates me. And I'm bringing it up now. Basically, what I'm saying is you said something about you have to have total peace, have total peace, have total peace. Does having total peace mean freedom from any aggravation? I think maybe it includes some aggravation.
So no, it's being at total peace in the midst or because of the affliction. Because that's what that is to you. It's affliction.
And there's nothing, I can't get out of it.
Okay.
And I can't make it not affliction.
I mean, you're not supposed to.
I have to endure.
But enduring while you're in resentment isn't enduring.
No, I'm not talking about enduring and resentment. I've gone through that. That's months ago.
Oh. But it's something that still has your attention.
Yes. Bible study's over. The lesson is interrupted. We don't get to the point. It's over.
But maybe it's the agenda, that's why you're getting...
That wouldn't get my attention?
Maybe it's what?
No, it's not that.
It's not? Okay.
No. The only way I can address this is, and it'll just take a second, is to go back when I first started teaching. This was during the quote-unquote fist fight stage of Trinity. We would spend 3 months on one verse with, in the midst of all the kids and the babies and the people crying and trying to figure out what to do about it. And it wasn't, nobody ever learned anything, but the very act of, and there's a lot of people that came and visited and they got upset because they couldn't sit there and have in an orderly, scholarly way learn something. I don't know why they were coming to me anyway if they wanted to learn something. But the whole point of it was, it had, from God's perspective, the Bible study wasn't about studying the Bible. The Bible study was about a whole other thing.
Okay.
That had nothing to do, I mean, it had everything to do with the Bible, but it had nothing to do with what I thought was the Bible. And it's the same, that is the same thing that's true now. The Bible study isn't learning the Bible. Bible study is living the Bible. And that, to me, and you've heard me say it often, I wish that I could do this mystery and satisfy my own integrity, I wish that I could do this alone. I wish I could, you may not understand this, but you will, maybe you do, how deeply this is really in me, how much I would like to just take this Bible and go live in a cave and have the ravens feed me or something. But I can't do it. The reason I can't do it is because I cannot do that and maintain any integrity to what I know to be true. And what I know to be true is no matter what it is that I need you and Shannon and Bella and everybody else, I need them in order to make manifest that which God has placed within me. And I need their foibles and their idiosyncrasies and their weirdness and their crying. Doesn't mean it's not about me trying to, this is why I've said for 30 some years now, if I ever tell you what to do, shoot me. Because it's not about that. It's not about, well, make your kid behave. Or it's about this transformation process that occurs at a level that we can't even think about. And it occurs not when you can no longer try to change situations or change people, but you endure and through repentance come to a place where you're at total peace in the midst of it all. That's the only thing I've learned here in 30 years. More than 30 years now, my God. It has nothing to do with how I think anything should be, or, you know, this is nothing like what I think it should be.
I need to ask you one more question. I have seen you many, many, many times. Someone will say something or do something that, I mean, I just, it's either offensive or stupid or a manipulation or an evil cut, or, I mean, it's just something that's just, and I see you.
That's all from Kevin.
And that's just from Kevin. And but I see you in that moment, it's like you stop and close your eyes and go somewhere, I don't know where you go, for 5 seconds or 10 seconds or 15 seconds, and then move on. And my question is, what are you doing?
I'm repenting.
Are you reminding yourself
I'm repenting.
Of what you just said? I mean,
yes, because whatever that was either hurt me or offended me or something, and I left the mercy seat because I paid attention to my feelings or my emotions
right,
for a
you
minute.
Had a reaction to it.
I had some reaction.
And what do you do?
I repent so I can return to the mercy seat under the wings of the cherubim. That's going to the closet. That's where.
I'm sorry, but you say I repent. Is that? Do you remind yourself of the truth?
I paid attention to me, and that caused me to leave the mercy seat, and so I did everything whatever is necessary to get back on it. I gave some importance to what I thought or what I felt, and then I had to get back on it.
So you're stopping and thinking what you just said?
Well, I don't think about it anymore. It just happens. Because I know above all things that I cannot stand to be in this kingdom of darkness anymore. So I just do something. I don't know what I do. I pray like...
See, that's what I want to find out.
Well, I just know that I can't. I'm lost in that place. I can't even stand to even put my toe in that darkness. And that darkness is any time I'm giving importance to something I feel or I think. And it's darkness, to me, it's gotten darker and darker every second. This is what I've tried to teach for 30 years. Maybe I've been unsuccessful.
I would say.
Well, if you looked at the evidence, I've been unsuccessful.
No, I'm looking at the evidence, but I would say.
Does that make sense?
I heard you answer your question while you were talking. In the sense that when you start talking about needing everybody in the foibles and this and that to be, because you're incomplete without everybody, and the non-response or the sloughing off or whatever comes against the love of God in you toward that person, because unreality has entered in, and you can't live in that state, and that's, I think, why you respond to all the stuff. It's the way God's love manifests itself through you.
Doesn't look like love.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't feel like it sometimes.
No, but it has. It really. It didn't. It's just that I've learned so totally. The only thing I've learned is how totally I cannot exist for a second Sometimes, as Harry said, it may last as long as 10 seconds, but I cannot stand it. I can't. There's not words enough to. I can't be when I have given importance to something about me, about my thoughts or my. You know, we kid about it in here and stuff, but I mean, you know, the difference between kidding about something and thinking I'm right about something, I guess that's what it is. And it's just so odious to me. I can't. It's that thing is the appropriate metaphor is Paul's. I feel like I'm back chained to a dead body, and the maggots are crawling into me because I know I'm the chief of sinners, and I can't give that any importance. I can't give what I think or what I believe or what I feel any importance. And the biggie for me was when I repented from wanting to be out of pain, not because I didn't want to be out of pain, but because it finally dawned on me that even that was giving breath to myself.
Giving breath to what?
Me.
Giving breath to pain.
No, I was giving breath to me.
Yeah.
You can't give any importance to yourself. And that's why, you know, you don't deal with issues. That's the way the world teaches. You repent. And repenting is it finally comes to leaving you yourself totally behind, not trying to change anything or be anything or have anything. It's a different universe. I don't know how to describe it. You know, the only thing I do is, to the best of my ability, it's not even to the best of my ability, that's crazy. It's because of the grace of God I've seen what He is. I can't stand it when I'm not where He is. And I'm not where He is if I'm where I am. If I give the slightest importance to what I believe about something, or when I think about something, it's like it's the worst smelling flatulence I've ever. It's boom. Anyway, I hope that answered your question a little bit. Anybody else have any response? It's just, you know, for me to live as Christ, to die as gain. That's, whatever is a gain to me is a loss to Christ. And it's a gain to me if I give importance to something that I feel or think. All right. Happy Pentecost.
You didn't say it this morning.